This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Kirkup. James, are you the chair of the Social Mobility Foundation?
I am the director of the Social Market Foundation.
We're
always very happy to be confused with the other SMF because they do good work too. Director of the Social Market Foundation. Occasionally, you write stuff for the Spectator, and used to be a proper journalist. I'm not sure if it was a journalist once upon a time.
Great. Well, you've done your intro better than I have done. So, James, welcome to the podcast. Katie, to start with, maybe let's just talk about the Greensill scandal, which has now erupted even more. Maybe just update listeners on what's been going on there and the Labour intervention.
Yes, so new life, I think you could say, into the Greensill saga, which has been rumbling on for a few weeks now, with various revelations largely coming from the Financial Times and the Sunday Times in terms of David Cameron's attempts to lobby on behalf of this company. Now, what's happened yesterday is the Treasury released two text messages sent by Rishi Sunak to David Cameron, and we already knew reports of a conversation between the pair that was reported some weeks ago, but now we have the detail. And I think it was reported that Rishi Sunak sent multiple messages. It appears there are two messages and also a phone call, and what the text show is that Rishi Sunak told David Cameron his request for access to government backed loans was being examined. Now, I think initially he said the suggestion was what they were looking for was not something they would be able to do, but I think the phrase which is Labour are latching onto today was this idea that Rishi said he would push officials to look into this. Now, since that, you've seen Labour go in the attack and say, let's look into whether Rishi Sunak broke the ministerial code by giving this direct access, by saying, he's going to push officials. The kickback from the Treasury is that they have chosen to release these messages. They say there have been many FOIs, but they've chosen to do it actively. They don't think the Chancellor's done anything wrong. And actually, what he was alluding to when he talked about pushing officials to look into this was something officials were already looking at in terms of ways you were going to expand the government-backed loan system for different businesses. So this wasn't a special treatment situation. I think that the Cabinet Office are looking into whether or not there does need to be an investigation, but definitely the sense on the government side is they are pretty confident that Rishi Sunak will not be seen to do anything wrong on the ministerial code side.
James, do you think that the government should be confident that it will be cleared in that way? And also, I mean, what's the former Prime Minister up to? What's he doing?
Well, I think on the Rishi Sunak government side, or narrowly on Rishi Sunak, I think he's probably going to be fine. I mean, that text message I read as essentially being a polite way of fobbing off David Cameron. I mean, if you are a senior cabinet minister and you want something done, you don't push the team to have a look at it. You just tell them and it happens. So I read that message back to David Cameron as, yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'll get the team to have a look at it. But, go away. And that's what happened. I mean, he pushed the team to have a look at it. They looked at it and they said no.
And also, hearing that, multiple messages from David Cameron. So I think the suggestion is we can't see David Cameron's messages, but the sense is that Rishi only replied to a handful of what were several.
Yeah. So I think Rishi probably doesn't have too much to worry about. I think the government probably does need to worry because this is all part of a sort of, eventually this stuff will start to tell. Eventually, if it keeps going, if you get the impression that people in power in the Conservative Party are doing favours for mates and essentially using public money to the advantage of their chums, that will ultimately become harmful. I mean, I'm just about old enough to remember Cash for Questions and the taint of sleaze that brought down John Major. I'm definitely old enough to remember MPs' expenses, which I worked on once upon a time. Yeah, I mean, this stuff is, it can eventually, when it builds to a certain point, become really damaging. We're not there yet. I don't think for a second that people up and down the country are talking about David Cameron's text to Rishi Sunak yet, but it will eventually, if it's not checked, give rise to some pretty corrosive suspicions about the Conservative Party. What's David Cameron up to? I mean, I don't know. He seems to apparently seems to think that his reputation wasn't low enough after accidentally breaking our membership of the European Union and running away from Parliament. He determined to further lower his standards standing in the eyes of the public, I think, by trashing what was left of his reputation. I don't know. And ultimately, the point is we absolutely don't know what David Cameron was really up to, because despite, I think, hundreds of questions put to him in his office by journalists, he hasn't responded to a single one. He, despite receiving, I think it's about £110,000 a year from the taxpayer to support his office because he's a public figure. It's called the Public Duties Cost Allowance. He's not responding in any way to inquiries. He is completely silent on this stuff, despite the fact it's of clear public interest and he's in receipt of public money because he's a public figure. So that's not very good, is it?
Yeah, I think there's a question of how sustainable is it for David Cameron to just, you know, put his head in the sand, which is clearly his approach, that if you just duck out, I think the only interaction between a journalist was when a journalist called him and early on, and David Cameron made the mistake, obviously, in his view, of picking up the phone and quite quickly said, oh, you know, you need to speak to my people. And ever since then, that number has mysteriously not had anyone picking up the phone on it. So he clearly thinks that if you ignore it, it might go away. But there are more and more damaging allegations. And I think the question is, given the various FOIs, I mean, I understand the government is being flooded now of FOIs on the various correspondents, not just, you know, Rishi Sunak. We know that also David Cameron got in touch with two other Treasury figures. And I think, as James points out, I mean, the fact that Greensill were not granted what David Cameron wanted means, I think there's obviously a limit to damage in terms of this government, but it is this whole kind of general sense of sleaze. It's still a Conservative government. And I think that there are lots of requests now for more clarity on who said what to who. And I do just wonder how long, is it sustainable for David Cameron to just completely ignore this affair? I mean, his reputation is clearly being heavily damaged by this. And we know that so far there has been little appetite in the Tory party to bring David Cameron into this. You could have an option where select committees would look at that. At the moment, I think the Tory party have so far decided to try and keep the Prime Minister out, not force him into these appearances. But I think if these damaging claims just keep adding up, is that really sustainable? Maybe they will have to put some pressure on one of their own.
And James, can Labour make much political capital out of this? I mean, we've already seen them trying to have the cronyism charged throughout the PPE procurement last year. But obviously, it seems like in the success of the vaccine rollout, all seems to be forgiven. And particularly Kate Bingham seems to be vindicated as a choice for that. So do you think that Labour has much capital to gain from here?
I think it's probably of limited impact on public opinion still, because most people will judge government by the important stuff. Are we getting vaccinated? Are we getting out of lockdown? Long term, as that, I think it has the potential to corrode. I mean, my worry is, frankly, that standards have lowered across politics, and actually public expectations have lowered as well. I think it would be a sad thing if actually lots of voters looked at politicians overall, concluded that they were in it to help their mates and this stuff was just of normal, but then shrugged and concluded that, well, that's just the way things are. I hope that our expectations of politics have not been lowered that much, but I'm slightly worried that we don't expect as much of politicians as we used to, which is a fairly sad thought.
Katie, something that may not be that much more cheerful is today we're seeing more about what our summers might look like in terms of foreign travel, hearing about this colour code system. Can you tell us about that and what countries are being talked about?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. In a way, it's slightly good news for people who want to go on summer holidays, because it wasn't so long ago that the government was suggesting we might not even have summer holidays. You know, it would all have to be staycations. There was a point, I mean, a few months ago where they were even warning us not to necessarily book a staycation. But now, ultimately, it's a suggestion that summer holidays are going to be given the go-ahead from the 17th of May. That's what Grant Shapps, the Transport Secretary, has been saying. Like, he's been the big figure in Cabinet lobbying for this. We know he likes holidays himself, even if he has to come home a quarantine in the process, as we saw last year. But yes, I think we're getting this traffic light system. It was touched on in the bank holiday announcement on Monday. But I think at the time when the Prime Minister was talking about it, there was quite a lot of frustration because you're hearing about the traffic light system, but there was no date on when it might start. But I think We can expect ultimately the green list of countries in 2 to 3 weeks is probably going to be very limited. I think that if you're looking at that traffic light system, it's going to be more restricted than last summer, and also different criteria. Now it's about vaccination. So the general sense is if you want to go on holiday to Israel, you're in luck. Obviously, we need to see what these countries have in terms of entry requirements. But there's also talk that actually holidays to Greece could be on the menu. You know, I find that interesting because I think a few weeks ago when I was talking to various figures in government about, and obviously this was a moving picture, there was big concern in government about allowing holidays parts of Europe, because other Europe, so even if, for example, and someone did give me the example that you could say holidays to Greece are okay, but there was quite a high chance that UK visitors in Greece could come across French citizens, and France has high volumes of the variants. So I think we need to see the detail, but I actually do read this as almost a more liberal, I mean, caveat that to a degree, a version of the travel policy than we were expecting a few weeks ago. I think where this is coming under criticism, though, is just the cost of holidays. Our holidays now becoming something that only very wealthy people can do, because if you look at the testing regime you're going to have to do to go on holiday, even if you are vaccinated, I think there are various estimates that to go on holiday to Greece and come back and do your test is probably potentially £400 adding to your holiday. So there's obviously a catch. And I think some people also worry about what is the stability of choosing to go on holiday, and then what if the rate changes while you're there? Now, you presume it would have to be pretty drastic to go from green to red, but this time around, it's not just that you'd be stuck at your house for 2 weeks. If there was a dramatic change in circumstances, you could have to do hotel quarantine if it was turned to a red list country, and that's clearly thousands of pounds stuck in a hotel near an airport on your way back. So I think it is definitely much more complicated this year, but it has moved, I think, to a softer, more open approach than what was being discussed a few months ago.
James, any foreign holidays planned this summer?
No, none. And I have to be, I'm sort of slightly unconvinced by all this stuff. I mean, I'm biased. I haven't been on an aeroplane for 7 years now. I think I haven't missed it. I used to travel an awful lot, and now I don't whenever I can. But I mean, I think it's worth remembering that even in a good year for the travel industry, only 60% of the UK population takes a foreign holiday. So it's not like everybody jumps on a plane every summer to go away. And I think this year, I mean, bluntly, you would have to be, I think, really quite committed to book your 2 weeks in Greece or Portugal. And I hope the people who do that, if those arrangements are changed, don't then turn around and say, I'm quite cross with the government, something must be done about this. I mean, if you book that holiday, you're doing so knowing full well that we're still in the middle of a pandemic. We're still having a pandemic here. So I'm curious as to why. I kind of know. I know the politics. I know why ministers want to push this and get us all feeling cheery and sunny and back to normal. I think they'd be better off putting more stress on the, I can't remember the exact number, is it 9 million people in this country who have family abroad, to prioritise making it possible for people to go and link up with family members abroad. I think that's probably a better use of time and attention than giving everyone 2 weeks, 2 weeks in the sun. Important and nice as that is. So,
yeah. James and Katie, thanks very much. And thanks for listening. Do join us again for our next episode.